It was Paul Morris who asked me to speak tonight, and honestly, at first, my reaction was, but I absolutely know nothing about Sarah or the matriarchs, and it was certainly not false modesty. I know a bit about some of the women in the Torah. I know enough to have probably at one point in the past Googled and found that there's only 3,000 named individuals that we read about, and 300 are women. And so obviously, you know, you wonder and you worry around that a little bit. But I'd never come to the matriarchs, and so this gave me the opportunity to do so and to also examine why. And I think it was just, not that they're unsympathetic characters, but they're big characters. They're impressive characters. How does one approach them at all? And so this has been a marvellous opportunity just to dig into the books, and I have a stack on my desk at home and even a couple in my bag tonight. I'm not going to go through again the story that Jenny has just read for us, although probably there's a couple of points I will come back to. Because that's the purpose of tonight, really, just to think around and tease out the points that are of interest to all of us, I imagine, from different perspectives. The thing that springs to mind is just the questions. You know, you can't read these, whatever faith I imagine that you worship within. You can't read this telling without questions. You know, there seems to be some appalling behaviour, some things that, as humans, leave aside contemporary humans, as humans, you can't understand. What was this from somebody that we all regard as a matriarch, from Sarah of all people? And there's the behaviour thing, and there's also that this whole, you know, exposition about why did Sarah laugh when she was told that she was going to bear a child? Well, I mean, what a question. Why would she not laugh? You know, it seems entirely reasonable. I love that particular bit where the angels arrive to announce that Sarah's going to have a child, and she's dispatched to go and make some bread and then never reappears. And I always wonder, you know, what happened, how the bread appeared, because it was obviously eaten. So questions abound, and in the Jewish literature is, you know, a lot of things that one could read. There have been commentaries written on this passage, every other passage. I think the earliest that I could find was from the 2nd century BCE. The first published commentaries are from around 300 CE, where what we call the Talmud specifically refers to Sarah and names her as one of only 7 prophetesses in Judaism. So from that time on, men and women have written multitudes and answered some of those questions in various ways. I'm asking for your forbearance tonight, because tonight, instead of going with the traditional commentaries, I'm not going to mention Rashi for anybody for whom that is meaningful. I'm going to look to two more recent commentaries, and they're both women, and I suppose you could both call them feminist scholars, but both fascinating. And the first one is a woman called Tikva Frymer-Kensky. And she presents to me, you know, quite a compelling argument, but at least something interesting to think about, which is that although the structures of the life at that time were clearly patriarchal, not all power comes through the formal power structure. In modern days, I'm as Jenny's just said, I'm a professor of management. We call it positional power, i.e. the Prime Minister. We also call it personal power of people who have influence through the force of their personality, for example. So the women often had, and demonstrably so, personal power, personal influence. And there are so many occasions, and there's several, the one that's most obvious in my mind is when Rebecca disguises Jacob so that the father Isaac mistakes him for his brother and hands on the birthright. So, you know, working outside a power structure, but getting what we might think of as her own way, or we might think of as helping God get his own way in a way that would have not been possible otherwise. So that this is a fairly received approach to say, yes, the women often acted in ways that are incomprehensible to us, but surely they moved forward God's plan. And so there's a way of understanding it. I want to then move on to Savena Tubal, and you can see I'm slightly hesitant because this is a different version again, and she draws greatly on linguistic analysis, sociological analysis, and archaeological analysis from the civilizations of Mesopotamia at that time. And I said to Jenny before, I'm going to take you back slightly to chapter 11. Chapter 11, where Sarah appears in her previous life, not as Sarai, but as Iscah. Iscah meaning the seer. And so Dr. Tubal's suggestion, well researched and well grounded in all sorts of evidence from those different disciplines I've just referred to, is that it's important to think of Sarah as Sarai, yes, but also as Iscah. And then, if one lets one's mind go even further, to think of her as a 65-year-old woman who clearly had a history. I don't mean to say she had a past in that crude sense, but she had 65 years before we meet her for the first time. She was an adult woman. She was not a young woman taken in by a husband. She was a fully formed adult with a profession of her own. She was a priestess with a status of her own. Pause for thought. The reason why that is interesting is because potentially it does offer a yet another angle. And all of these are angles only. They're perspectives that enable us to engage with the text. But it offers us an angle that says, if that's the case, she had all of these traditions, she had all of these teachings, she taught people. She brought these with her, and surely some of them were different to the ones that she and Avram, now Abraham, were receiving from God. And just to take one example, there are many, but this is one that I think is the quickest to explain. How many occasions, actually, and this is not a test, how many occasions is rhetorical? I think there might be three. Where there is debate about which child is going to inherit. Is it the older? Is it the younger? And sometimes there's manipulation, there's management of this process, and so the right one gets the inheritance. I read that. Likely we mostly read that. Within my mind, not the word possibly, but the concept of primogeniture, the firstborn inheritor. We, you know, I see people nodding. We understand that as being quite common. But if you imagine the society when it was the lastborn who inherited, for very good reason, they were the one at home, they were the one more likely to be fit enough to look after aged parents. If that was the norm, there would have been at the very least a debate, a discussion about which child. We judge it harshly. We judge those women who interfered often through our modern eyes. But I suggest that maybe they were doing the very best to uphold the tradition as they had been taught in it and as they were teaching others. So I'm imagining this time not simply as Sarai and Abram becoming Sarah and Abraham, changing from Sarai, meaning my princess, to princess, a different status, but changing. We don't know if Abraham had an earlier name, but we do know that about Iscah. And we might start seeing the transition to the covenant, the coming into the covenant, as starting even earlier than we had imagined, and holding perhaps even more significance than we had thought. And I just want to close with two excerpts, two phrases from. One is a prayer that we read on Friday night, and we bless the children and to the girls. It's may you be like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And I feel a little shiver down my spine now because I hear that differently, and I think not just Sarah the righteous, Sarah the, you know, the matriarch, but Sarah the woman with a life and a brain and a heart and worries and all of that turmoil of the blended family that she was engaged in trying to manage. And then lastly, I turn to a prayer that we say every day, and it's the Lord commands us to every day, La'asof v'divrei Torah, engross ourselves, immerse ourselves in the study of the Torah. And so I say this before my colleagues speak, this is, I'm sure you will agree, this is not about right and wrong and who is right and who is wrong. It is about the immersing in the study of and the talking of and the discussing together and between our faiths. Thank you so much, Dave, Paul in his absence, for inviting me and for the opportunity to say these words tonight.
Thank you so much.